Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, so it's middle of the summer. Everybody celebrated the 4th of July a couple of weeks ago, and it's hot around here. What's happening in studios, though? Anything fun, exciting, cool, nifty?
Well, yeah, we've talked about it in the past, so projects come in streaks, and I'm right now working on three different infographic projects for three different clients. It's really fun. Oh. What is interesting, of course, is that they're all being done in PowerPoint, and the main reason is people want to be able to make tweaks to it if they can without always having to come back to me as the designer. So that's really, really fun. And also, I just wanted to remind everyone, the last podcast, we announced a contest for every entry, for every review of our podcast on iTunes. Your name will be entered into a drawing for a free one-year subscription of Office 365 Home Premium. You have until the end of the day. Give your review today, and then we'll announce the winner at our next podcast.
Which is really awesome, Sandy. Thank you. Because Sandy's donating her own subscription that she's had. As a little side note, I can say that I know we're recording this a few days ahead of this release, but there are a couple of names in the hat already. So thank you very much.
And neither of them are Troy or Nolan, as I've read the rules. But
this is very true. Hey, you know, side note. So this is what's happening. I've actually been working with trying to figure this out because of the release of some new features in Office 365, I noticed a little while ago I lost my Fast Insider release. So I was like, okay, I got to get this down because I really need these capabilities. Because one, I want to write a paper about it. Two, I have another thing coming up about it. And three, it's just really cool stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm in my Office 365 admin area, which keeps changing. I mean, it's getting better and better. The problem is, but all my notes on how to do things don't work because they changed the whole system around. I'm reading. Well, it turns out that you cannot get on the Fast Insider if you're on a corporate level. Basically, it's open to consumer level Office 365 accounts.
Wow.
Unless you do this coding hack, which I may do. Or I may just submit my name and win Sandy's consumer level one and get it that way. Let's hear. What's new with me? You know, I'm just going to go with the whole personal thing here because I'm very excited. Well, when this releases, I will be, let's see, where will I be by then? I'll be in Chicago. So here's the story. I've got a quick meeting in New York. Lori and our youngest daughter are tagging along and they're doing a campus tour of NYU. So very exciting stuff. And then we're kind of swinging by Chicago on our way home for an extended weekend where we get to spend a few days with our middle daughter, who's at Great Lakes in the Navy. So we kind of actually get a summer vacation out of this whole thing. So very excited about it. Nolan, I would like to talk to you about the weather. It's supposed to be muggy and rainy. That's not what I was expecting.
I will see what I can do.
Yeah. So on a personal note, I mean, there's lots and lots of projects, but kind of excited. I actually get a family vacation that we didn't think we were going to get this year.
Good for you. That's great.
So I'm doing like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I've got projects coming back from like 6-9 months ago to make tweaks. It's like infographic like illustrations. I've got a template or two, some print projects, some new stuff, some old stuff. We're just still doing the widescreen show. But right now I'm off site. I'm actually down in Virginia because yesterday my wife and I came down for the birth of our twin girls that we are adopting.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Whoa,
for you.
Phenomenal.
Nolan. Oh my gosh. I could hugs. I that's so
speechless
awesome.
And excited. Wow.
Does my news win?
I have goosebumps. Yes, it wins.
So you're having a summer family vacation too.
We are. We have doubled our family overnight. Oh, wow. And I'm hence the bad audio. I'm sitting in a hospital room right now.
Oh my gosh.
We just had The girls have been with us for the last 24 hours. They're about 25 hours old right now.
Oh my gosh, that is phenomenal.
Oh my gosh.
We just stopped the podcast. Yes. So I don't think I keep a clear mind at this point.
We're done.
No, we'll get back in a PowerPoint. The world doesn't stop, but it is it's pausing at least.
It definitely changes. Yeah, wow.
We'll be down here for another week, possibly a little more, till we can get back to New Jersey. But they're healthy, they're perfect, they're beautiful. So
congratulations.
Our beautiful daughters. That's great. Do you have names yet?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
You want to know them?
Yes.
Okay. Roxy and Zoe Hames.
You are awesome. Those are great names. Okay.
Okay. All right, let's get back to PowerPoint if we haven't lost our audience already.
Oh, yeah.
News. What's happening in the presentation world of news? I don't know how to bring that
okay,
back.
Okay. Well,
no subtle transition there.
I'll start,
Okay.
Presentation guilt, near and dear to my heart. We've been talking about 3D capabilities being added to PowerPoint for several months now. Well, Microsoft is going to introduce those 3D tools to the public at a webinar offered by the Presentation Guild on July 18 at noon Eastern Time. So what you can do is go to presentationguild.org and register for that webinar. It's open to the public, and I'm pretty thrilled that Microsoft is working with the Guild to distribute that information.
And Troy is hosting, right?
Yes,
that is actually
is.
Why I need Fast Insiders again. So yeah, it all ties in. Yes, I'm really excited about this. And as a matter of fact, I'm working on, one of the projects that I just started is utilizing a lot of 3D capabilities, or let me rephrase that. I am using a lot of 3D rendered art, and I've got access to an entire place called it's one of the largest auto manufacturers in the world, and they have a thing called the Virtual Garage, and I have access to the cars we're unveiling.
Oh my gosh.
I have 3D models of the whole thing. I was like, you know what? If we could push this meeting back about 2 months, I know I'll have these capabilities. Anyways, I'm really excited to see it because there's so many projects where I do have the option of using 3D elements and to be able to put them into PowerPoint, even if it's just an image. But now I'm really excited. Stephanie from Microsoft's, it's Stephanie Horn, right?
Stephanie Horn. Thank you for bringing that up.
It's going to be phenomenal. And I didn't even know this. It's open to the public. Everybody, if you're getting this when it first releases, just stop now.
Over to the
Presentation Guild.
Yes.
Yeah, because they're both on the exact same day.
Exact same day. Say, I do have a question then. When you're running your 3D, are you on Windows Creator? Or are you on standard Windows 10?
Well, I should rephrase that. For any project I'm doing currently, because 3D is not all of the, I'll just say all of the 3D format, file formats are not supported in Office yet. Mm-hmm. We're going to change that on July 18th today. I'm offloading Ping images and movie elements, but to be able to use them as native 3D elements is what I'm really excited about. So yeah, I'm actually using 3D elements created in different 3D environments or software, and I'm using them just as what everybody can utilize movies and images. So
understood.
I'm hoping to transition that over the next year and very excited about it.
And if you're wondering what that last 30 seconds was about, you have to go to the webinar to understand what these elements, because it's not just PowerPoint itself, it's what it formats it brings in. So
this is a big advance.
This is big.
Okay, so I got one that's not PowerPoint related, but I just thought it was really something, a cool look into, I would say, the future. Samsung Galaxy phones. Now, I am on the iPhone side because my whole family uses iPhones. I basically got the boot at Christmas and was told, here's your new phone, get with the program so we can all be, messaging and this and that. But the Samsung Galaxy, which was the phone I used previously, their fingerprint reader, it can not only unlock your phone, it can now be used to unlock your computer. So, proximity, and now it's the little announcement I read, it's only working on Samsung laptops and it's soon to be released. In other words, here's the technology we have. It's forthcoming. I just thought it was kind of cool technology, techie news.
In other non-PowerPoint news, did we talk about the Outlook update for Mac last time? If we did, I'll talk about it again. We might have talked about it offline. So Outlook for Mac, I know it's not PowerPoint, but if you are on the Mac, it just got a really great update, which includes read receipts. which I've been asked for a long time. And the big one for me is a schedule send. So
we did talk about this offline because now I'm envious.
And this actually, apparently, according to Troy, this is better than the PC version, because on the Mac version, you simply, assuming you're using an Exchange account, you can set an email to send, you know, in the middle of the night or 2 weeks from now, and your app doesn't even need, Outlook doesn't even need to be open, and it will send. So this is something I've been
It's really exciting. On the Windows side, it works, but your Outlook has to be open to do the send at that point, which really kind of confuses me because it shows up in my drafts. You know, it goes to my Office 365 account, so I can see it in my phone and my web app version that it's in the drafts ready to be sent, but it doesn't send unless the local computer is on. So the ability to do it through the cloud-based, I think, is an awesome, better come to the Windows side soon feature.
And we'll explain the one of the business reasons for it. I mean, there are lots where you would want to send an email later, but I'll tell a client something will take, you know, a week or the whole day or something, but that may not be that many hours. Like if I say I'll get it to you by the end of the day, it doesn't mean it's going to take me 8 hours and I'll start right now, but it's just that window. Now, if I do happen to finish something, you know, right within the first hour, very often I will send it, but then there are other times, you know, with a back and forth where you want to be done with it. You want to get it off your plate, but you don't necessarily want it getting back to them so soon because you don't want to set that precedent.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. I like absolutely. That idea. Nolan can do it, you know, at a minute's notice, because the next time it is going to take you all day. So, you know, it's
good one. I've never tried that
situation.
There are many things that frustrate us. Puppies that whine at 2 a.m., twins that whine at 2 a.m., traffic, weather, houses, yes,
no.
And PowerPoint. Yes, even our favorite presentation software frustrates us. Sometimes it is the interface when we're designing. Sometimes it's the performance when we're presenting. Other times it's the options when we are presenting, like presenter view. Or, you know what, the point is there are lots of things to be excited about and a few things to grumble about. So this afternoon, we're just venting a little.
Mimi, let me start.
Okay, you're up. What's the first grumble point? Frustration point.
We're going to all agree on this one as a start, and we've talked about it in many podcasts, but it's how we are limited to the fonts that we can use in PowerPoint.
I so agree.
You know, it bears repeating. The fonts continue to be an issue in PowerPoint. We can't embed them in the master, and many fonts can't be embedded at all, blah, 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 on and on.
I mean, I think it's and I probably said this before, it's the biggest thing holding PowerPoint back from being a true design program. Because, you know, one of my favorite definitions of graphic design is the combination of image and text. It's got the image part down pretty good. I mean, you know, it's not Photoshop or anything, but it's got the image part pretty down. It's the type side of it that, you know, just doesn't operate like a true design program. And then, you know, we get into the whole technical side of font replacement and removal, the whole single byte versus double byte font.
Oh my gosh, I'm dealing with that right now, right today.
So, you know, font, here's my feeling. Fonts were bad. And then Office removed the very few font helpful features there were, and they became horrendous. So it went from bad to horrendous in my book. I mean, you cannot see if a font is installed on a computer. You cannot substitute fonts because of that whole single byte, double byte. Let me rephrase that. You can't always replace fonts. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. You can't get a report out of where fonts are used within a presentation. You cannot control what substitution fonts are used. You cannot identify what substitute font is used. I mean, yeah, fonts, I should probably stop.
We don't want to be here all day, but yeah. All right, how about...
Okay, let's go into my favorite. My favorite. What about animation? Anybody have any complaints about or frustrations about animation setup?
Well, the animation ribbon. We talked about last week how even today, as much as I use PowerPoint, I end up accidentally deleting animation settings when I absentmindedly apply.
Absolutely. Yeah, we all do it all the time.
Yep. You have to use that silly add animation. I mean, it's the button to use, but it's the interface is so bad that it needs help.
Yeah.
Well, and if we're talking go ahead, Nolan.
I was going to say
three words. I don't want to get you mad seeing how we're grumbling.
Yeah, I was going to say three words, which are no Mac timeline.
Oh my gosh.
You know what? But there's a small one that bugs me. On the PC, the very first entrance animation is fade because that's the most popular. On the Mac, it's still alphabetical, which means you actually have to arrow down to like the second line to get to the fade, which is what everyone uses. It's just extra clicks. And I've talked to, you know, about this to Microsoft endlessly. I said, remove clicks. Like, you got like something that takes three clicks, it only needs to be two. Get rid of that third click.
How about you, Troy?
Well, there's the new one. I don't even know, the bug where I know it's going to be fixed soon is what we've been told. But, you know, and this just got me this past week. You know, I'm control clicking to duplicate elements or text. You know, I'm going to take a text box that's already got a preset animation, and I need to add another text box because it's all stylized text. We could talk about text alignment and, yeah, paragraph styling and everything else. But anyways, you know, you drop it down and you lose animation right now. So there's just a huge regression bug that's new. So this is like a new frustration.
Fixed. No, not for me. Microsoft announced that it's fixed, but they're not sure when they'll release the update. Yes.
Yeah. So, but it's bugging the heck out of me. So I would say that, you know, animation, it could just be so much better. Trying to take the positive way of saying this. It could have such a better workflow, but it leaves everyone feeling like they're just working in a broken environment. And I mean, we're professional designers that specialize in presentation design in several programs. When we have a problem utilizing it on a daily basis, everyone else is most likely experiencing even higher frustration levels than us. Or maybe they're not, because they just think it's, I don't know. You know, I'm extremely frustrated.
I've said this before, but on the other hand, the addition of Morph means a lot of those animations, from my perspective, are irrelevant now. Like, absolutely. I don't even need them because I can now.
You know, I have a frustration with Morph, though. I mean, I can be frustrated with it as well. I mean, I love it, but you can't tell when it breaks. You can't, because there's no way to identify this element. You know, I want a little indicator. This is number. This is object A, and on the next slide, it shows you this is object A, and these two map together because it loses the mapping between them, and then you don't know it until you. The only way to tell is to preview the animation to see if it worked, and then you got to work your way backwards if things kind of break in the linking, because it does happen.
So are you describing, I've had it happen on one presentation over and over again. I will set the morph transition, save it. The next time I open it, it's gone. Has that happened to you?
I have had that happen. I've also had it where, you know, I'm duplicating the same slide to move the elements around, but somehow one of them doesn't connect. So all of a sudden it just does a fade on the next slide. But I'm like, but it was just, anyways, it. So yeah, I'm frustrated with it as well. I'm excited about it, but I get frustrated utilizing it sometimes. Okay, another topic.
Well, what about, footers, page numbers?
Oh, geez, there's one.
Yeah, that's a big one. Now, that's an unsolved problem that's been around for decades, right? I think it's further complicated by the fact that people don't understand the best practices as they are. You know, it's sort of, it doesn't work well, but, you know, even the best practices are, people don't understand for adding or removing page numbers and footer elements. So, what, you know, essentially it's just things get broken. Things don't, you know, format the way you would expect them to. The behavior is just buggy. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you gotta resort to hacks to reset it. That's just where it starts.
Sandy? Yeah, it does. It's a nightmare. Copying and pasting slides to me is the biggest source of the problem.
From one presentation to another?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
That's the worst. And so I end up with every template I create, including a slide or slides with instructions on how to maybe troubleshoot it. I always tell people that this isn't a guarantee you're going to get it right, but this is how they should look, and this is how you can achieve that look when copying and pasting slides, which I discourage.
Yeah, and a tip I did hear recently, you probably know this and we may have mentioned it, but is if you, in that first deck that you're pasting from, if you first turn off the page numbers there,
Yes.
Then copy yes. them over and then turn them back on.
Exactly.
Sometimes that helps.
Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, so, you know, if you bring it over and it gets messed up, sometimes you can turn it off and turn it back on, and that will fix it. But just within the deck.
You know, Sandy, you pretty much stole the words. I would say is, you know, page numbering is such a problem for everyone that we include a troubleshooting and best practices info slide in every template we develop. We just standardize the set. Nolan, we have that tip in there, which actually I was talking to Echo and she kind of I was putting something similar in there and she kind of simplified it down. I was like, that's a really good way to do it. So we updated our info slide, but it's a broken piece, but it's not a bug because it works. But, you know, and then you end up with multiple page numbers. You know, you end up with one that came in with the imported slide, but it's not mapped to the master, but yet it's still, what's interesting is that you can actually program any box to save the page number based on the coding. And yeah. So I think page number and footers and the understanding of how to use them is also kind of a surprise that it's still such an unknown element, even though it's been in there since at least PowerPoint 2000, same methodology.
Yeah. And I get client requests a lot for a simple way to like name the title of the presentation and have it automatically, you know, be the footer. And it's technically possible, but I think it could be simpler. Like I've had clients say, hey, can I just type in the title on the title slide and have that be the footer everywhere? And the answer, of course, is no.
Steve Rinsberg, PP Tools, has some pretty cool, I think they're his off-the-shelf tools that can do that. I've seen some other ones where that's, you know, companies hire him to basically code things like that. Just create us a little button that'll do this. You know, it's a lot
We should do an episode once on PowerPoint plugins and what you can do. What Steve does and John Wilson and others is so beyond above my head and understanding. But
there's so many coding things.
Yeah, but you can customize PowerPoint to do things like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is just knowledge. Yeah. That'd be a good one. Okay, how about this one, Nolan? Mac PC inconsistencies, because I have them. I know you have them, and I think the world has them.
You have personal inconsistencies. animation timeline, we talked about, that does not exist on the Mac. We've been begging for it for years and years and years, and it just makes it unbelievably difficult to do any sort of advanced animation. I think a lot of the big inconsistencies have more to do with some recent features that just aren't available on a Mac. I was doing a webinar just yesterday. yes, on the ride down here in the car. But
Nolan!
Can't rest. So and somebody was sort of complaining that, you know, why doesn't the Mac have this or this? And it just, things are introduced generally on the PC, things like the new IV charts, the waterfall and box and whisker and tree map, icon library and SVG support. All this stuff will come to the Mac. When? We don't know. So right now it's just on the PC. So, you know, you've got these great new features and you're on Office 365, but oh, you're on a Mac. And then, you know, there's some other things that have been around forever, like the small frustrating things. You can't set a custom font theme. I just dealt with that with a friend who had to send me her file. I did it on the PC and sent it back to her. It took me, you know, 30 seconds, but she needed it. She needed a custom font theme.
It's just a missing font.
Yeah. You can't relink a detached Excel file. And
you can't always do that on the Windows side. The functionality is there, but it doesn't always work just for reference.
Okay. All right. Well, then that's bad in and of itself. Okay. What do you got? Troy, what do you have?
Speaking of link things, more or less, video. Because, I mean, even though videos are embedded, they're still being handed off to a video player. And I understand the technical reasons. Video playback between the Windows side, the Mac side, and I'll say the mobile side are all very different because PowerPoint's handing off to another mobile or another video player type of application. It's all seamless to us, but because they're different, you see things. But I see that you have less control over video on the Mac, and also on the Mac, you can't save your presentation out to a video file format with sound. And I'm not saying that video plus separate audio file is perfect on the Windows side, by the way. I'm just saying you can do it. Mm-hmm. I'm usually frustrated by it.
It's just a step ahead. That's
exactly. And maybe that's what it is. And then on the mobile side, obviously there's no export to video thing, but the video playback is even a little different. And I will say ironically that I just spent yesterday at a production company, my task for the entire day, I brought in three different three different flavors of 4K show computers that we have, and I use this monstrous desktop they had. And all we're trying to do is identify if we can run these very large, true 4K videos back-to-back in PowerPoint for this presentation. Otherwise, we're going to have to resort to a different technology for the presentation. So, I mean, video playback is something that could be so much better.
Yeah,
Sandy, anything on video? Or no, not video. Video is me. Anything on Mac PC inconsistencies you see?
I think just in general, it's the interface isn't consistent. So I'm slower. I get frustrated using it. So with the otherwise parity between the two programs, you know, you can run most anything built on a PC on the Mac. I will build it on the PC and test it on the Mac before sending to the client.
Hey, you know, we should just throw in, because we're talking about it. I used to use Parallels on the Mac for a long time when I, you know, to have a PC version. I've since moved to a standalone PC. I've got a MacBook Pro. And using Parallels, like, it's good. And I know a lot of people do it very successfully. For me, I stopped using it because every once in a while, there was a small thing. It was a keyboard thing or something that just didn't work quite as well or smoothly on the PC. And then also some performance issues as well. I mean, again, I know some people, it's totally fine. But for me, I just wanted that separate siloed PC.
Did you use Parallels or Boot? You said
Parallels.
We started with Boot Camp and then we moved to Parallels just because it's built in.
Yeah.
Boot Camp, I had some issues with the video drivers and the performance across using it. So Parallels better. The biggest frustration for me is forward delete. I can never remember how to do forward delete when I'm on the Windows side on a Mac. I'm like, oh, wait, is it the Alt key, the Control key, the Apple key, and delete? Mm-hmm. It was little inconsistencies like that slow me down. Sandy, to your point, they just slow down my production.
Yes.
I mostly moved to the standalone because I it was actually cool. I could go back and forth, and you can with a key command go from Mac to PC, Mac to PC. So, you know, when I was training, I first saw it as kind of a bonus, you know, for occasionally somebody would say, oh, how do you do this on the Mac? And I'd flip over because I would present off my MacBook Air, but using Parallels. But I realized like 95% of the people I'm teaching are on PCs, and it was weird having the Mac in front of them. And so I just said, let me use a PC because that's what they're familiar with and that's what they use. And I felt I should be really teaching to what they have. What about charting? Let's talk about charting. That's another huge topic. I think for me, the frustration is it's very difficult to make multiple charts in a file consistent if you want something different from the, you know, just a default chart that Microsoft gives you. There are .crtx files that won't get too heavy into that can help with that, where it allows you to create like a custom chart style.
Hold that thought. I'm going to come back to that. Keep going.
It's complicated for users to use, and if you really know how to do it, it can help you, but not everywhere. And I think there are a lot of just sort of difficult and non-intuitive just user interfaces with how to format charts. And sort of hold the best data design practices. Like if you want to direct label your line charts, you either have to do it manually or if you jump through a bunch of hoops to make it work. And, you know, we're still missing a lot of advanced, you know, charts that have become very popular recently. You know, there are a few that have made it in there with Ivy charts. The whole linked versus embedded thing is just a mess because it's just not intuitive. And I think the default is not the wise choice. The default is to link, not to embed.
Which I think is kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, I'm using charts a lot less than I used to. I put example chart formatting in the templates samples that I design, but I don't with my clients, and I'm not getting as many of them. That said, one of the things that frustrates me, as designers, we have a specific eye for how things should align, and default charts don't necessarily do that. For example, labels or any element within a chart, we can't nudge it. You know, that drives me crazy that I can't custom place I can custom place a data label, but I can't nudge it to a specific place.
And you nudging is definitely a frustration. Mm-hmm. You can control click on chart, and you can move the whole chart, but individual elements within it, no.
And all that manual, that sort of like very fine manual design, you know, formatting and editing is missing. I was amazed. If you use Haiku Deck actually, or if you saw the webinar, the Presentation Guild webinar, you can create a chart in Haiku Deck. And the cool thing is you can manually make the bars or the columns bigger or smaller, and the data changes. So that would be just an incredible tool. Like, you've got your bar chart and it says 50%, and your boss says, oh, now it's actually 48. Okay. Like, instead of having to go into the data sheet, just manually move it down and it changes the data sheet for you.
That would be awesome.
That would be huge.
Yes.
So I would say there, did you know that between PowerPoint 2010 and 2016, there's a chart label bug? It's basically the bounding box for the text itself for each of the data labels changes size. So if you ever open up in 2016 and you get the little pound cross hatches, and you know, you downsize the font and it appears, it's because that chart was probably created in 2010, which uses a little bit looser, I believe it is, a text label. We encounter this quite often because a couple of the education government institutes, they're still on 2010. We build out these, they give us the files, and we're like, oh, wait, does it go the other way? Do we build it and they can't see it? You know what? I take it back. 2010 when we build it, and it goes back to, if we build in 2016, we go back to 2010, they can't see it. We open it, we're like, what do you see? That's a frustration. It's a bug, in my opinion, and it hasn't been resolved yet. We've reported it. I reported it well over a year ago. And I had really good examples here. This is state education.
You know, there's another bug that I forgot to mention. Well, you reminded me. And this was uncovered.
Just to clarify, bugs are frustrating.
Bugs are frustrating. And sometimes they get,
what do you got? Which one?
Bugs are frustrating. Sometimes they get the immediate attention of Microsoft, and sometimes they don't. In this case, the bug is users adjust the font size in a slide, save, close, open. It reverts back to the default size. So
that's charts.
Yep, charts. And that was
so the axis labels and stuff. That text there, or the like the I'm trying to think.
I'm sorry.
Where I've seen it.
Data labels. Uti was saying Uti. I can't.
That's okay. Ute in Germany. That's awesome.
In Germany,
yes.
She reported the bug, and she's a trainer as well, which was very hard for her because she was going to be training the following week. I don't know what the result was, but she said it's the chart labeling, the data point labels, that sort of thing.
You know, the other frustration with charts is, so Nolan, you had mentioned the CRTX files, is that you can't, through the interface, just set, I want to set my default chart style, even if it's one of the Microsoft library options. Right. Like, just use this one. But what we really, really want is, why is there no custom chart styling features? I'm going to create a custom. Now, there kind of is, but it travels with the document. It's not a template basis, and it's not labeled. You get this little icon that looks like all the other icons. There's no way to label it. You know, there's all those are frustrations. So, you know, setting custom charts in some capacity is needed. And right now it's a frustration because it's not there in any capacity. You know what else is missing? Line spacing and typography. I'm just going to transition to that.
Okay, go for it.
Talked about it. I think those are somebody else start. Cause I just think line spacing and typography.
Line spacing, the big issue is that you can't see your changes in real time.
Exactly.
So you do 1.2 and you're like, is that going to work? I don't know. I have to hit okay. Okay, that didn't work. Now I got
to
go back and
go back
do it again.
Yep.
And the defaults are like 1, 1.5, 2. Like when most people want 0.9, 0.95, 1.0, 1.1. So yeah, that's line spacing. What else you got, Troy? Because I know you've got a lot of this.
Oh, line spacing. Well, first of all, that whole line spacing thing, I use everything in multiple. You know, I just don't even use the standards because at least in multiple, I'm working in a methodology that
is designed. Those are multiples, but they're ridiculous multiples.
Exactly. And then people use exactly because it looks good there. And exactly is in my opinion, is a poor choice because exactly is only when you're at that point size and it holds
forever and ever. Right.
Yeah. So if you want to create a title, larger graphics, suddenly you have this incredibly tight looking line spacing. it's not tight. It just didn't change. It doesn't vary with the, anyways. So.
Well, and here's why that's relevant. We build a template and supposedly no one's going to change the type size because they're following our rules that we've established, right? So
silly girl.
If we were, yes, silly girl. So truth is they will not. And if we were to apply exactly to the line spacing, that would be an even greater mess. So yeah, that's why we use multiple lines.
So I feel it this way. As a trained designer, anybody that is a trained designer instantly dislikes Microsoft Office default options for line spacing. They just look at them and go, that is not right. You know, that isn't quite what I would expect. And then as the trained designer, if they become instantly frustrated when they attempt to format that line spacing, and especially if they're going to do it across multiple lines on a slide, you know, because you got to open and close. You can't say, hey, I want to create a paragraph style for this and apply it here and here and here. Now I use the F4 repeat because I can, you know, you set one line spacing, or paragraph spacing is more what I'm thinking in this case. You set it and then you quickly select all the paragraphs that apply to it and use F4 to repeat that same setting. And then you go to the line spacing and you use F4 to, you know, it's just a lot.
Yeah.
I'll tell you
one of the big things is you have to go to line spacing, pull down and go to line spacing options. Line spacing is the kind of thing that a designer does constantly. So in InDesign, it's like right there next to type size. I want to make the type size bigger. I want to change the line spacing. In PowerPoint, it's just too many clicks to do something you have to do all the time.
Now, isn't there an add-in or add-ins available that would allow us to do that?
I don't know.
There are a few. The tools too, add-ins, although I think they're phenomenal. They have so many things in there that things get buried.
Can't find it.
Mm-hmm. They have a couple of line spacing. I'd have to actually look through it, but they have a couple that I've used. Steve Rinsberg has a really good one. The PP tools. Oh, which one is it? It's the one where it lets you basically create paragraph styles and have a library of them. It's pretty powerful, and I would need to open PowerPoint. That one's pretty good. But in general, they're not quite fixing what should be just a simpler, just making it a modal or constantly, constant
right.
update dialogue, make it an action pane would solve so much, issues, you know, beyond, did anybody talk about text wrap?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, the fact that we don't have it? No, we didn't. My hand is raised. I'd like it. Next.
Please do.
I was going to say, actually, beyond text wrap, you know, the ability to go around a photo or a shape is the lack of threading text across multiple text placeholders. Yeah. So, yes. You know, you want to create your own custom multiple column, because I could complain about that also. But, you know, or across slides. I want this text to automatically flow to the next slide because I'm not doing a visual presentation. I'm doing a print document where there is a lot of text. You know, those things are missing.
And it really
– frustrating.
And text wrap is available in Microsoft Word. So, like, the code's there. Why can't we do it? I don't know about text threading in Word, though. Does it?
Well, it goes from page to page.
Well, but does it go from, text box? Because you can make text boxes.
I use Word so little I couldn't. Yeah. No, it has to.
That's you Publisher. Used to be able to do that in Publisher, right? Yeah.
By the way,
I just go to InDesign and.
By the way, I open up my first Publisher document. A client, potential client, wanted to change over all their, all these report or their template report templates to InDesign, and they sent me Publisher files. And first thing I learned was there's no Publisher for Mac. So I was like, I have Office 365. I should be able to get it. I couldn't find it anywhere. And then I realized, only PC. And then I had to go to the PC, download it, and it was fine. But.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another frustration. How about printing?
On printing, what I really, really am frustrated with is that I'm constantly hand numbering printouts, the thumbnail printouts. And I have to go through and label, because you get page one, page two, page three, but each one has 4 to 10 slides on it. So I have to go through and label them 1, 2, 3. These are the slide numbers. So I'm handwriting them underneath the thumbnails. Why don't we have printing that labels the pages? Now, on a thumbnail, you can't use a page number because it's microscopic, but it needs to be outside of it. So the printing capabilities need to expand. I also would like hidden slides to be marked as hidden. Why can't we print a hidden slide but show that it's actually hidden? Now, I do this through, I put a ping that says hidden on it. So when you print it, you get this watermarked, basically watermarking the printouts is what I do. If anybody's interested, you can download the ping. Just go to the PowerPoint blog and type in hidden slide or something, and you can download it, just because I find it such a frustration. And that's probably a 5-6-year-old blog post. Okay, I got another one too. Hold on. I got to talk about printing because I'm on this roll.
Okay.
In black and white, I think we've talked about this before. In black and white, you can set the print attributes for any element. Assuming you're going to a black and white printer, you could say, hey, print this in all black, print this in grayscale, print this in reverse.
PC only.
Those are – oh, you're right.
I believe it. You're right. I believe you used to be able to do it on the Mac, but not in the current version.
And yes, you used to be able to do it on the Mac. I remember.
So I find that a really, really good – win for Office. What is the where they lose it is that you can't do it to color. I need the same type of don't print this when you go to a color printer, because this element is part of an animation. It's going to cover up and block all the important data underneath it. Or, you know, they just need some sort of object level print attributes for color printers, just like they do for black and white.
Back to black and white, however, you cannot apply grayscale settings or adjust the settings to charts and tables. That drives me crazy.
Oh, can you? Is it all? I know you can't on Ivy charts.
No, you can't. You can't. You can select the chart and nothing else. Or maybe you can do it on charts now, but you can't. Tables, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. But there is something there that it does suck, because everything else is a nice, beautiful grayscale for printing, which, you know, we set the gray, we adjust the grayscale settings.
And I know I've mentioned this before, but a good business tip is, this can be an add-on that you can charge for. This can be a value add. You can charge your clients for making print safe or green safe printing by setting the stuff for them. Because most people don't know that it even exists.
Exactly.
Which is what I do sometimes.
I don't know if I upsell it, but I list it as part of the attributes.
It's up to you whether you want to charge for it or just say this is an extra service that's part of the template that I'm giving you that you know your competitor won't.
Most of them will say, no, I didn't know you could do that.
Exactly. Bleed would be nice, of course, but I'll stay. Hey, but let's just start with having the 8.5x11 default be 8.5x11. I'll take that first. Because it's, as we've talked about, it is actually 7.5x10 when you you have to manually change it.
We set our own. I created my own US letter and we just pin it as a favorite. And we just don't even bother with Microsoft settings because it's preset.
We've talked about,
shouldn't need to do that hack. And by the way, Sandy, you're right. I just inserted a chart. All those grayscale, black fill, blah, blah, blah. Yep. They're just grayed out. They're not available in any chart.
And I know this is turning PowerPoint into a desktop publishing tool, but we talked about people do that. So if you want to use PowerPoint to create a poster or postcards, and you send it to your professional printer, or your digital printer, even Kinko's, and they say, and you'd like it to bleed, it'd be great to have a little, you know, option in PowerPoint to take your thing and just add bleed when you make your PDF, just like in InDesign.
It would be a great thing.
And add your little crop marks. I know
that's pushing the limit, changing the methodology, because, you know, even in animation, you can't, you know, nothing outside the actual page size is respected. When you do a slide transition, it just lops it all off. But the idea is, if they did it there, it could also be a double improvement and improve animation and transitions to respect things that are off slide as part of, you know, like the half circle. You know, you see half it and you want to do a push. I want to see the whole thing move across, things like that.
Although I did run into an issue a couple years ago where I would put like notes on the pasteboard of a 7.5x10 thing. And when I went to print or make a PDF, you'd actually see a sliver of it because it was so close. It was like, you know, a quarter of an inch, eighth of an inch from the actual slide. And I could never understand how it was happening. So we just had to move the notes farther away. Mm-hmm. Haven't noticed it recently. So maybe it was a bug that got fixed.
I think because we are using PowerPoint more and more for print, that Microsoft should embrace that concept and help educate other users on the difference between a print and a projected presentation.
I love this idea. Oh. I love this idea.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity. And I don't know. And I hesitate to use the word wizard because we've had wizards before and they've gone away. But is there some way to say, okay, what kind of document are you going to be creating? Is it going to be for print? Is it going to be for, is it going to be a widescreen? Is it going to be, there are just so many things. Are you going to have animation?
Yeah. That's great.
Like, just having,
and that's like InDesign does that, and it says, "Hey, are you creating a booklet, a print thing? Are you, you want interactive? Do you want it this size?
Exactly.
Do you want to
stand?"
That's a great example, because InDesign definitely was a print only, and it I think it evolved very well into a multiple platform, a multiple output type of platform. Is it going to be a digital? Is it going to be? I mean, even when it kind of dabbled in the whole web design thing, you could take this and turn it into a web, but the whole interactive EPUB and what's the word I want to use where it's more or less an app? I mean, yeah. InDesign did really, really good on that transition, and they have some really good, I think I call them wizards, Sandy. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
That's great. And then that could take you right to, you know, print layout, you know, suggestions or, you know,
exactly.
Here.
Exactly.
I mean, God,
do you want to label the thumbnails with page numbers? Yes or no?
Yes.
I mean, I'm sort of playing this out now. So you launch PowerPoint and you've selected the wizard. Of course, you can hide it, you know, if you want later on, you know, preferences. But it says, are you creating an on-screen or a print-only presentation? Let's just say it's those two.
Yes.
You select print. First of all, the person says, oh, there's a difference? Oh, well, yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Oh, I'm not actually, I'm just making a PDF and emailing this around. Okay, I guess I'm making a print only. You select that, and then you get these options of, would you like a starter deck? Or here are 15 sample layouts, like when you go to, if you go to Slide Docs, you know, Duarte Slide Docs, it gives you sample layouts, and you could choose. You could say, oh, I want a 3-column, I want a 2-column and a picture, I want a this. And it creates your deck, and you're like, oh, I get it now. I'm just going to paste my content into this 2-column text box, and I've got a print document instead of starting. So, yeah.
Did we complain about multiple text column?
But we should.
That doesn't
we
always
could
work
add that.
So great.
Those, I just can't. I actually cannot figure out. Those frustrate me, and we're doing a lot of print or what we call PowerPoint docs right now. And we're using the multiple column, and it just frustrates the heck of me. Like, why can this feature not respect the bounding box, the boundary of the text shape? Why can you extend the text beyond it when it says wrap within? Mm-hmm. And I've said, it only happens in multiple. So I think that is, I think it's broken.
And it also,
the gutters are broken.
Oh, the gutters. Gutters start at 0, which is nobody would ever use. So you always have to change those. But I don't know about on the PC, but on the Mac, a lot of times, like if I paste a paragraph, let's say I have a 3-column, you know, text box, and I paste a paragraph of text into, you know, something existing, it will break the columns. Like it'll just, do you know what I'm talking about? Like it, like the second, it'll like overlay them. And now suddenly the first two columns have 0 and the third. And what you have to do is you have to reset it to 3 columns to fix it. So yeah, that's column. Because I always recommend people use columns, but then it's buggy. And of course, we don't have text threading, so you can't make your own three text boxes in, you know, column version.
So all let's right. talk yeah, about. Okay, yeah. well,
what about
so let's talk about
imagery, right?
Imagery is a good one. There's some frustrations there.
What do you got, Troy?
On imagery, I would say, well, it is okay. So I'll give a positive spin here. PowerPoint or Office, but mainly PowerPoint, they did it right. I mean, way back in the day, they got this right very early. PowerPoint was one of the first, I'll just say, mass use applications to support PNG with transparency, and that revolutionized content development for presentations. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Microsoft did a great thing. I actually think it was a rogue developer who just said, I'll just put it in there because I think they're cool. I mean, the web hadn't even embraced ping images with transparency, and PowerPoint 2000 did. So they can get it right. In addition, the new SVG, although it's a very narrow use parameter set right now, I mean, that is a huge, another big win, I'd say. But things like killing EPS in a 1-week announcement, hey, we're no longer supporting it because of potential issues, but yet a lot of the other world uses EPS. The lack of the ability to take CMYK images that are embedded and recognize them and just convert them to RGB to prevent problems is missing. That pixel cutoff limit. Now, I know not everybody's going to encounter this, but it's basically 2 times the width or 2 times the height is the maximum image you can put in there. So if you want to, especially with Morph, move around this giant image, it'll just cut it off. You can see it in the edit view, but when you go to animate it, it's just lopped off because PowerPoint has a pixel limitation. Yeah, there's a lot of imagery frustrations. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff, but other stuff that's not
so good. I'm disappointed in the compression. I think it's pretty poor, and the best description I've heard is that it's like a hatchet. It's not a scalpel. Whereas some third-party tools are a scalpel, and it does. It's just it. I don't know. It just makes things JPEG-y and pixelated, and it's. I always try to avoid it. I also would love to be able to swap all instances of one image in a deck for another, and it would technically be possible because it's XML, and there is only one instance of that image. So whereas like in InDesign, if you have one logo that's on, you know, 50 different pages and different sizes or whatever, you just change that instance of it, and it updates everything, which could be really nice if you're trying to reduce size of things, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I cheat and actually go find that image
in the XML,
or I right click and I use 7-Zip just as a little. Yeah. Oh, that was really exciting! I just knocked off my microphone. I use 7-Zip to open it up, break open the file. I'll go find it. And then I'll optimize it and throw it back in there. And then I just got to do a quick preview. So I, instead of finding it all instances, I do that.
Yeah.
I use NX PowerLite as my third party tool. How about you guys?
Yeah, that's what I use.
Yes.
Okay. I found them to be the most reliable. Yeah. And I've also used them for a long time. So it's probably a comfort level. And I know there's a number of ones out there. I just really do not endorse PowerPoint's compression, image compression. I've had historical issues with it. You know, the other thing about compression that really bothers me, I hadn't thought about this story now, is that you can't use the do not compress images in this file. It's a file level attribute. I want it to be application wide. I would love to just tell PowerPoint, never use your compression tool unless I actively go at it. Mm-hmm. But yet every new document I open or from somebody else has that check mark, or doesn't have a check mark to say do not do. I think that should just be I think Microsoft should give the ability to get out of the way.
I don't know if it's possible to put that on automatically, but I have one client that whenever I get something back from them, it seems like they've compressed it, even though I've told them like multiple times, don't do it. And they swear they're not, but something's happening, like, because I'm always replacing certain images.
No, I know what you mean. I have a colleague that I work with. When I get presentations back from her, the images are a mess.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
Maybe there's an enterprise level way to like always compress on save or something. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe she has, you know, NX PowerLite is an add-in for Outlook.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Yeah. So it could be that
if
that's
there's
all
a server. If they're getting it through an email, there are several third-party tools, NX PowerLite being one of them, that have a server-based version. So basically, anything that passes through their email server automatically gets compressed. So if it's an enterprise client person, I'll just say that, they may not even be aware of it happening because it's happening after they hit send and it's happening to their file without their knowledge. And you're receiving a compressed version. Don't endorse those type of scenarios, by the way.
While we're talking about imagery, I am slowly or quickly moving. I'm almost there 100% of any time I'm going to use a logo, it's going to be an SVG, which means I have to put it in on the PC side, but it also means that thing is never going to get compressed. It's impossible to compress an SVG. So it's going to be crisp. It's going to be clean. So no problems.
Boy, I'm really narrow on my use of SVG just because some of the older versions don't support it yet.
They don't. You get blank. You get blocks of color.
Yeah.
How old? Like,
I know 2010 for certain gives you a ping image, which can also cause problems.
And if it touches an like 2011 Mac.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I haven't. That's the color block one, right?
Yes.
That's where it turns into a solid.
Right.
Well, I guess now I have to be more careful. I haven't
really,
run into
really
issues
narrow
yet.
On my use of it. Okay, how about the back end? How about like master slides and layouts? Is there any frustrations there, or are they just great? I find a problem in formatting them that you can't use format tools. You can't use PowerPoint's eyedropper or Format Painter to pick up attributes from one master and apply it to another, or from one master and apply it to the master layouts. Or you can't use any third. Well, actually, I normally say you cannot use any third-party add-ins, but Sandy, I believe you told me that the position PP Tools position Thorhammer does not affect the XML. No, which is, that's,
it works. I use it all the time.
Now, Troy, you're talking about elements on layouts. You're not talking about the entire sort of layout itself.
Individual, you want
your header box on this layout to match the header box on the other layout. So you try to use
correct.
The header. And now you can do it. So just so everyone understands, you can do it, but it will mess things up. So you might.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So it's recommended not to. That's what we're saying. It's not like it.
The XML behind it, and you know it's messed up when you add a new slide and suddenly you have a bullet in your title because you position the title or you use the format painter to pick up the attributes of the bold and the color and you know the font, and for whatever reason XML makes it a bullet list level text placeholder instead of just text with no bullet. So the master layout looks correct, but the slide always ends up with a bullet. And that's XML corruption right there. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
I'd love a slide sorter view for masters. Because when I've got more than 04, like I can't see them all on a screen at once. And I can't move them
around. The inability to expand and contract those in the side pane is also a thing. You should be able to collapse all the master. So you just see the four master slides and you can choose which one to expand.
And while we're on that, it'd be great to be able to nest things too.
Yes.
But,
what is nest?
Oh.
So like basically have multiple levels. So if your master, which I always call it, mm-hmm. That's your big one. And then everything mm-hmm. else, all the layouts are nested one level deep. But what if you had you had five chart layouts that you wanted to nest further into a hierarchical type thing. And then you could collapse those.
I used a slightly different example for that, Nolan, is say I have the exact same template, but it's color coded by division. So I now have four, I have a blue variation, a red variation, an orange variation, but now I have to have four master slides. I would like to, and that the problem is if you need to change an element, you need to change it to the blue one. Then you need to go to the orange version, make the mm-hmm. exact same change. I would like them nested so that I can create a corporate master, and anything I change on that master will ripple down through all the layouts, and I would have nested within it the four color code options.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
That's so good. No, it does make sense.
Formatting. It would also, there are coding issues. It would mean changing the, our little, change layout and new slide layouts to show the nesting, and your whole slide sorter view. We have sections, and that's pretty much all we have. We have a master slide and a whole bunch of master layouts, and those are just sections to me. So the whole idea of a slide sorter view of masters it seems like the idea and even the coding is there. It just needs to be ported into those elements.
Yeah. Keynote can nest slides. You can go multiple levels deep.
I'm not a big fan of the way you preview them or how they come up when you're basically changing a layout. I find it a little confusing there. You know what else is
you're on a roll. Keep going.
Well, you know what else is a part of this is that when we're formatting, when you have all these layouts, there's not an easy way to see which layouts are applied to each. So you're in slide sorter view. You have your mm-hmm. slide deck of 100 slides, which was a client putting, nine different things together, and suddenly you have this big mess of duplicated layouts and everything else. There's no way mm-hmm. in slide sorter view to get a little identifier as to which master and which layout is used. You have to click on each one, do the drop down.
Yep.
Again, that would be great as a modal one. Maybe it's just an action pane on the side. So you click on it and it gives you the information over there, and then you can reassign it. I just find it's very, very tedious and time consuming to try and clean up a slide deck of its masters and master layouts to consolidate them down.
Right. First, you have to see if you're in the master, you have to see which slides are assigned to that layout. You have mm-hmm. to get out of the master, reapply those slides to the correct layout, go back mm-hmm. into the master, then you can delete the junk stuff. Yep. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, whereas in InDesign, you go to delete something, it'll say, hey, what do you want to replace these slides with? Which master do you want to replace the now deleted one? Which makes it very easy.
That methodology should be carried throughout or carried over into all types of. Okay, so that's enough of the back end. Uh-huh. It's great that it's expanded functionality, but it's a frustrating environment. Again, it just feels like it wasn't master planned. Mm-hmm. It was just features.
We haven't really talked about styles, but that, of course, is something we would love, and that's something that came.
Well, I like my style, and yours as well.
Yeah, what you're talking about? Good style, well, Nolan. You both are nice dressers.
Clean cut hipsters. yeah, like paragraph and character styles would be huge. Well, they're missing. And again, this is something that Word has, so just bring them over. And that would allow you to, with one, in 30 seconds, just change all your second level bullets, yeah, and or change all your quotes or change all your footnotes, whatever, as long as you had applied those styles. And it's severely lacking.
Yes. Okay, so instead of the back end, how about the front end? How about just the interface? Just, the ribbon and things.
Yeah, I mean, I think some tabs don't show enough. Like Sandy mentioned animation. Some show too much that's extraneous, like the design tab. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you can customize your own tabs, but you can't customize the default ones.
But when you customize it, a lot of people don't know of what is available in the back end to add tabs.
Oh,
yeah. Yes.
And the whole backstage thing, as far as the interface goes, I'm just not a big fan of having to click file and literally my whole presentation goes away to show me all this other information. I would prefer that be a slide out. And even then I want to control how far it slides out, because you're oftentimes referencing stuff in the slides. I mean, how many times do you click file and go to whatever you're going to do, then close it so you can go look at the slides, remember what you're doing, then go. I just think it could be a little less frustrating.
What about presenter view?
I think there are a lot of opportunities there.
That's the perfect way to put it.
And presenter view is a good example because it has improved to the point where, I mean, I used to completely just ban it and not
that long ago,
it.
Troy.
and I do use it quite often now, even if I'm frustrated with it. Things that it's lacking are things like the file name in the top menu bar. I just think that's a missing element. Because a lot of times the presenter view I'm using it for is because I'm using those notes panes, because we don't get a teleprompter and people want to put their notes over there, but you have to use your mouse to go up and down. Why can't we use a keyboard up down arrow or the mouse scroll wheel thing? Those are frustration points every time I go to use it.
I'd love more customization of panels. Being able to move things around, turn them on or off, add, other options. There might be more advanced options. It's just
Ooh, how about this? How about preset customizations? Create your own customizations and have a drop down so you can.
Yes, that's exactly it.
So I have a teleprompt view.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Teeny thumbnails, big, huge text. I have somebody wants to see current next, so I would get rid of all text and just make the two images side by side as big as possible. Presets. Yeah. That's an awesome idea.
I like that, and I don't know how this could be done, but because we don't have a teleprompter, that scares a lot of presenters, teleprompter, because what if they can't keep track or keep up with the teleprompter? But there should be some sort of scrolling.
Like auto scroll?
Yeah. Have text that's large enough to see, which we can do now, but then we run out of room. I have to encourage my clients to only have, a limited amount of lines of notes. But for those who want teleprompter type approach, we need scrolling.
Yes. Frustration, definition, the feeling of being upset or annoyed, especially because of the inability to change or achieve something. Well, that's the official definition, and I think it definitely describes our feelings, often on a daily basis, when working in PowerPoint. The good news is, even with a feature needs list that goes back a decade of mine, there are items where the frustration pain points have been addressed, and now they're just part of a great workflow. So things do evolve and change. We do take our frustrations, our complaining in moderation, knowing that things could be much worse, and there's always hope for tomorrow. fun time. Pro and tech tips. Anything cool and gadgety or you've seen or doing that that people can share and admire and go, that's a great idea?
Yeah. There's a great stock site I like called deathtothestockphoto.com. And I mostly use Shutterstock, as I've talked about. But every once in a while, I need something hipsterish or very unique. And that's where I'll go to deathtothestockphoto.com, which is one of these sort of subscription sites. You can subscribe and get packs of like 15 every other week or something like that. But if you pay the 15 a month, then you get access to their whole back catalog. And it's just very unique, well-shot imagery if you're looking for something not at all stocky.
You know, I'll follow that up with one that it's really a major site out there, I guess. And I was not aware of it till I'd say a month or so ago. One of my designers, I asked him where they got the image for this site because I was very concerned that it, you know, was under royalty free because it hadn't been labeled. Usually we're using Adobe Stock's library system right now and like it a lot. But the one I'm going to talk about is called Unsplash. Have you guys ever heard of this?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Okay. It's been around for a while. I mean, I did my research. I'm looking at it. So I actually did a blog post. It would be, I'm kind of trying to look it up right now. So June 21st. So it wasn't that long ago. I just posted it. Actually, as I'm reading it, I have a comment about you, Nolan. My co-host Nolan made a comment about a project where, Unsplash. But what's really funny is one of my designers had actually, and I mentioned, oh, that's what it was. I mentioned that when my designer's like, oh, that's where I use it. That's where we got the photos for this project. See, it all comes together once I think it through. Unsplash, really, really good stock photography site. And I really like a lot of their images. It's got a lot of things going for it as far as finding, first of all, the search engine is really good. I like that. Finding kind of unique, non-stock looking. So it's probably along the same lines as your death to stock photo site, Nolan. It's just another one out there that's a really, really good resource and kind of gives you a little bit of a different flavor than most stock houses do.
Yeah, it's good. I get their emails as well.
So I like that. I like that. Tune more to add to the list. And speaking of lists, the Guild, Presentation Guild, has a list of, I don't know if it's royalty-free, free stock photos, or just stock photo sites. A complete list is on their site, as is a list of safe fonts. And we've talked about fonts before, safe font, meaning Microsoft standard font, something that's going to for sure travel with your presentation from computer to computer. And so my pro tip for the day is to get access to that safe font list by going to the presentationguild.org.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging, design, show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at www.tlccreative.com. I've got the powerpointblog.com, and we've got our Facebook page, facebook.com/TLC Creative, I believe. Anyways, that's it.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. And if you're looking for training in data visualization or presentation or speech coaching, you can head over to nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz and my blog at PPTWiz blog or the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. Or search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.